No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez. Together, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions into BBSRADIO and the number 1. Maria's off today. She's out in the Caribbean somewhere on vacation. I hope she's having a great time. And we have a special guest with us, John Forrester. John is with the Committee for the Capital City, and we're going to talk about a type of retrocession, I believe, is the best way to categorize what John wants to do. But he's going to tell us all about how the people of the District of Columbia can get their equal rights as far as he's concerned. Before we start, let me just mention that the number one protagonist in the District of Columbia, Jason Chaffetz from Utah, who is constantly interfering with the laws and the budget of the District of Columbia, has decided not to run for re-election. So everybody in Washington's doing a little happy dance. Yay! You know, we're worried about who the next guy's going to be. Maybe Trey Gowdy, who's not very good to us, or there are other people on the committee. But I wrote to the Washington Post today and I said, let's not forget that Orrin Hatch is retiring, maybe. The Salt Lake City Tribune is calling for him not to run again. So I don't know what that means, because old Jason's from Salt Lake City. So we'll see if we're really going to get rid of him or not. We may see him back sooner than we thought. John Forrester's with us, and we're happy to have him on the show. John, are you there?
Yes, I am, Senator. Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We met recently in my office, and you told me about this great plan you have for the District of Columbia. So let's talk about it. What do you want to do, John? Explain it to us.
Okay. Well, generally, we're in agreement with, you know, the vast majority of D.C. residents that, you know, we all need voting rights and home rule equal to all other Americans. And a large percentage of D.C. residents would like statehood as a way to get rid of the meddling that people like Congressman Chaffetz have constantly meddled in D.C. politics.
Absolutely.
And so that's is a victory. But as you said, you know, there will be another person. You know, there's going to be another unelected, unrepresented person who thinks that meddling in D.C. affairs is a good thing. So we think this lack of voting rights for D.C. residents is a problem that's looking for a solution. And one solution is clearly to become the 51st state. Another solution that we would argue, and that's what we'll talk about today, Senator, is joining an existing state like the state of Maryland. If D.C. were reincorporated back into Maryland, we believe that's an equal form of statehood that would solve the issues that we're trying to solve here. And we actually believe that it is more politically viable, although it's anything to improve our situation is a big effort. But it's in theory, structurally a very excellent solution to the problem, and I would love to discuss that with you and your guests today.
Okay, well, let me first explain to our radio audience that when John says we're going to get another person, we will get another person. And the problem with this is that the whole system breaks down for us when this happens, because this guy was not, or woman, whoever we get, was not elected by us, so they don't answer to us. And that's the big problem. It's not just having a member of Congress interfering in our rights, with our rights. It's about having a member of Congress that's got no skin in the game interfering with our rights. And that's a big problem. So tell me, John, let's start with this. What's in this for D.C.? What does D.C. get out of? First of all, explain your idea. I mean, okay. It's different than traditional retrocession, which is we just go back to Maryland. And let me explain to people again before we start that the idea of going back to Maryland is because Maryland is the state that ceded all the land for the District of Columbia. It was originally ceded by Maryland and Virginia, but we've given back the portion of the land that belonged to Virginia. So now the land on which the District of Columbia sits was all at one time part of Maryland. So go ahead, John.
Yeah, that's correct. We are functionally a federal enclave in the state of Maryland, but we are run by Congress has final authority over this federal enclave, but they've given us some home rule, which is not complete. It in fact, as any listener from D.C. knows, the license plates in the District of Columbia say, you know, no taxation without representation, because the battle cry that founded this country is actually still in effect here in D.C. So we think that we approach it rather straightforwardly, that the city of Washington could become the 51st state. That's a fact. That would solve our problems. We would get the voting rights and home rule that we wanted. We would be truly independent. We would have all the elected officials that every other American has. We'd be equal. But we have suggested that we could also go back to Maryland and become a home rule city in the state of Maryland, or we could become a county in the state of Maryland. In fact, many people have recently suggested that we become Douglas County, Maryland, in honor of Frederick Douglass, and that we would not be a part of Prince George's or Montgomery County, but we would be our own unique home rule city in the state of Maryland or county.
Explain to me, John, what's a home rule city? What do you mean by home rule city?
Great. In Maryland, their state legislature only is in session for 90 days. And the way Maryland is structured, their local jurisdictions really have enormous power. So if D.C. was going to join any state, the state we would want to join is Maryland, or rejoin. If we were a part of Maryland, let's say today the District of Columbia was actually Douglas County, Maryland, we'd still have our mayor, we'd still have our city council, we'd still have our local advisory neighborhood commissions, we would have our own budget and all this stuff. But we would also we would have four members of the Maryland State Legislature Senate in Annapolis, and 12 members to the House of Delegates in Annapolis, Maryland. So D.C. would become a city or a county in the state of Maryland, just like San Francisco, you know, is a city in the state of California. So we're suggesting that that functionally district residents would have everything they were looking for if we were either a state or a part of a state. And we would argue, and I'd love to talk about that sort of as the second part of our discussion. First, you know, what is it that we're talking about, and what is the politics of achieving this solution? But functionally, right now, the government in the District of Columbia operates with the Congress having veto power. If we were a part of Maryland, Congress would not have veto power. We would obviously be just like any other city in America, where we controlled our own home rule budgets, but we also had to, you know, participate in the state legislature, and then of course be in compliance with federal law. So reunion with Maryland or cityhood or Douglas County, Maryland, whatever you want to call it, that is basically a normal, it puts normalcy back into the D.C. situation and doesn't treat us as this special federal enclave that is essentially denied voting rights. People are subject to taxation, but they have no representation in Congress. And our local budgets and our local laws are subject to influence by federally elected officials who don't represent this area. And as the paper said this morning, the article you referred to is that Congressman Chaffetz enjoyed, you know, making political points to help him get elected in Utah by doing certain actions in the District of Columbia that were counter to the wishes of D.C. residents, but helped him in his campaign in Utah. Well, that's totally crazy, and that's unfair, and there's no other city in America or in fact, hardly even in the world that is under that kind of rule.
Well, that's absolutely true, and people should realize that one of the reasons that these guys like to mess with the District of Columbia, there's two reasons. The first reason is they can, and the second reason is it gets national attention. You go and try and change the gun laws in Houston, and it may make all the Texas newspapers, but it's not likely to be on the national news. In the District of Columbia, you do something, it makes it on the national news. So there's an incentive for these guys to mess with us, and some of them, like Chaffetz, managed to do it on a regular basis. Okay, John, you've told us what's in it for D.C. Tell me what's in it for Maryland. In a deal, you always have to have something in it for both parties, right? So
that's correct.
Us what we get out of it. What does Maryland get out of it?
Okay, to achieve success, we would need district residents in support. We would need the state of Maryland in support, and we would need Congress in support to put D.C. back into Maryland. What would Maryland get out of it? Well, the District of Columbia has a higher per capita income than the state of Maryland. Our per capita income here is higher than all 50 states, and that's in part because we're an urban city, but also because it's a very, very, you know, well-educated, wealthy city. In fact, we've been running a budget surplus for 17 straight years and have record surpluses here. This would be a real economic value to the state of Maryland. That would be number one. Number two is that we're extremely well-educated. We're, you know, the most. The District of Columbia has a higher percentage of college graduates than any other state, and certainly, you know, higher than Maryland. So Maryland would benefit from a great, you know, workforce here. And the third thing is, D.C. is very Democratic. It has a higher percentage of registered Democrats than any state, and certainly higher than Maryland. So I have made the claim that Maryland would become richer, smarter, and more Democratic by the addition of D.C. residents into their electorate. And Maryland is a Democratic state. It's controlled by Democrats. So they, in theory, have quite an incentive to further their power and to further the Democratic Party in Maryland. And district residents would become part of the Maryland Democratic establishment, and I think would value that role and would benefit Maryland tremendously. So I think it's a win for Maryland. I think it's a win for the district because we would gain everything that we're trying to achieve. And also, interestingly enough, it's this is the politics of it, is it has a good chance of being supported by Congress if Maryland and D.C. wanted to do it. And the reason I say that is Republicans in Congress universally oppose statehood for the District of Columbia as a separate new state just for pure partisan reasons. They don't want two new Democratic senators. And it's unfortunate that they look through those lens, but that is the reality that unfortunately keeps Republicans being almost universally opposed to statehood for the city of Washington. However, the Republican Party has ironically almost universally in favor of voting, of allowing D.C. residents to vote through Maryland. It is a myth that Republicans, you know, are opposed to D.C. Voters having representation in Congress. We suspected that was true in the beginning, but through talking over the last 20 years to many elected Republicans in Congress, we've discovered that they are very strong advocates of full voting rights for D.C. residents as long as it doesn't include two new senators. And that's just where they draw their partisan line. Even Chaffetz, the gentleman that we were just speaking of, he has suggested that he is in favor of D.C. voting as a part of Maryland, ironically, even though it would take away, you know, the punch bowl that he has fun playing with. But it just goes to show that in Congress, you could get almost universal support for, as we call, retrocession or rejoining Maryland, because I have a hard time believing that Democrats on Capitol Hill would be opposed to D.C. residents having full voting rights. They prefer statehood. Democrats on Capitol Hill prefer it, and we know D.C. residents prefer it to be the 51st state instead of a part of an existing state. But that may not be, if it isn't an option that we're going to be given, clearly the other option is worth considering. And I think that's all our organization is trying to say. We're saying, hey, we want statehood. You know, maybe we'll become the 51st state, but if we joined Maryland, that would actually have all the benefits we want and wouldn't have some of the political obstacles that are apparent. Actually, you asked me a question before, what's in it for Maryland? And I told you all the positive things about Maryland. I'm sorry, about the District of Columbia, but there's actually another reason that it's favorable to Maryland is because it precludes a commuter tax. And I think that many, many Maryland elected officials who support the residents of the District of Columbia and their campaign for statehood out of respect and doing the right thing, that support could easily drop off at the end if they realized that the district being a state would be able to tax the commuters who come in from Maryland. It would be a enormous hit to the Maryland budget if D.C. was made a state and could tax Maryland residents who worked here. So that's another reason for Maryland to consider supporting our efforts to rejoin Maryland, because it would eliminate the possibility of a commuter tax.
Well, you know, I mean, I think those are all good points, especially the last one, because what John is talking about, for our listeners, in case you're not aware of this, is that the District of Columbia is not allowed to tax income at its source. Every other state is allowed to do that. So if you work in New Jersey and you work in you live in New Jersey and you work in Philadelphia, you pay a small tax to Pennsylvania, and that is taken off your taxes in New Jersey. So it actually doesn't cost the taxpayers anything, but it costs the state of New Jersey something. And in the case that John's talking about, it costs about $2 billion. So it's a significant amount of money. It costs about $2 billion to the states of Maryland and Virginia, probably a little more to Virginia than it does to Maryland. But it does cost Maryland a significant amount of money if we were to impose a commuter tax on which many Washingtonians believe would happen if we became a state, because it would just put us in line with other states. But one thing that I have a problem with, although I understand what you say about Capitol Hill, and that may very well be true, that Congress, especially Republicans in Congress, would be considerably more amenable to having the district retrocede into Maryland. The Republican Party of Maryland, we have to accept, D.C. would have to accept it, and Maryland would have to accept it. So my first problem with it is that D.C. residents are not likely to accept it. We've polled them. They don't like the idea of becoming part of Maryland, or many of them don't. They think that the two jurisdictions have grown up over the past 200 years along independent lines. And the Republican Party although in Congress they may like it, the Republican Party of Maryland is not going to like it. Maryland is not a Democratic state. They have a Republican governor, a popular Republican governor. The governor prior to this was also a Republican. They've had many famous Republican governors, many of them corrupt, as a matter of fact, like Marvin Mandel and Spiro Agnew. So the Republican Party in Maryland is likely to oppose this vehemently, because the District of Columbia, 74% of us are Democrats, and they're not interested. I would think that Maryland wouldn't be interested in getting 300,000 new Democrats, and also Washington D.C. would immediately, or Douglas County would immediately, become the largest city in Maryland with population, and also by far, as you've already pointed out, the richest and most educated. So why do people in Montgomery County not hate this idea, John?
Well, a couple of minor correct or comments there. First of all, I believe that there are four counties in Maryland that are bigger than the city of Washington. I believe Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and Baltimore County, I think, are larger than D.C. as far as population, and I think Baltimore is about the same.
Biggest urban population. Let me make that clear. We wouldn't have a bigger population in any one of those counties that you named, but we'd have a larger urban population.
Right. And I do think you've accurately pointed out, and I would agree with you, that the Republican Party in Maryland would not like this idea, because it would diminish their chances of electing, they have had some success at the governorship level in Maryland, and it's very likely with D.C. residents joining Maryland that, and their huge, overwhelming Democratic numbers, that it would be maybe unlikely for Republicans to win the governorship again in Maryland. African Americans would become a greater percentage of Maryland, which would potentially lead to senators from Maryland, African American, and this would be supported by the Democratic Party in Maryland. The number of Republicans, though, in Maryland is extremely small. It is not a they've only been successful at electing Republican governors. The Maryland state legislature is extremely Democratic and can override the governor's veto on almost anything. The president, Miller, and House Speaker Bush basically run the state of Maryland, and the Democratic Party runs Maryland. So I'm not sure I agree with the characterization. In any political change, there are winners and the losers, but there's a lot of winners here for being for D.C. You know, D.C.'s a winner, and the Republicans on Capitol Hill, you know, are going to win because D.C. doesn't become a state with two Democratic senators, but in exchange for that, they're not going to have a chance, you know, unless they come up with an incredible candidate for the Maryland governorship. But, you know, again, the state of Maryland is run by the state legislature, who has a veto-proof power over the governor, and it's highly Democratic. So I would correct that characterization. But and then as far as D.C. residents, you know, we have a saying in our little group, Committee for the Capital City, that, you know, we have met the enemy and the enemy is us. You know, a lot of times district residents make it sound like, you know, the whole world's against us and that, you know, people are trying to stop us to get voting rights. But, you know, we argue that this elegant solution of going back with Maryland is politically viable on a theoretical basis and benefits, you know, both Congress, Maryland, and D.C. So if we D.C. Democrats are opposed to it, then, you know, then we're shooting ourselves in the foot, because the question is, do we want to solve the problem, or do we like having, or do we prefer the status quo? And as a 40-year resident of the District of Columbia myself, I am not willing to accept the status quo, and complaining about the problem is of no interest to me. I know what the problem is. I think it's what is a viable solution. And obviously, statehood, I think I would like to couch it that the statehood forces for a new state and the reunion forces for joining Maryland are basically two branches of the same thing. They both solve the problem and, you know, made the, you know, best idea win, but they're two complete solutions to the problem, and it's just a matter of which one is achievable. And I think they're both huge uphill battles, but I also think that district residents have easily supported 51st state, because when you have nothing, I always say, you know, D.C. stands for doesn't count. You know, when you have nothinghood, you know, you always want, you know, when somebody asks you what you want, you're going to say statehood. You know, 51st state, we want to be a state. People who say, I don't want to be a part of Maryland, to me, is just a lack of understanding of the way America is structured as city, county, states. You know, all cities are in counties, all counties are in a state, all states part of the United States of America. If there's any other city in America that doesn't want to be a part of its state, or any county that thinks it should break off from the state that it's in, you know, fine. You know, but that's not needed. You know, most people are happy being in a city, in a state. And I also think that D.C. residents view that they don't realize that joining Maryland would mean we would have, you know, 12 plus 4, 16 additional elected representatives that all of us could run for in Maryland. So we would be integrating D.C. with Maryland. And I think if people understood that, the gut opposition that, you know, they're proud. I mean, everybody loves D.C. The people are proud. People live here, love it. Tourists who come and visit, they love the city. It's a great place. And I think there's a home pride effect that, you know, why would I want to join Maryland? I love D.C. Well, joining Maryland doesn't change D.C. D.C. is still, you know, the same borders that it has now. It's whether we call it, we could call it Douglas County, and then we're Douglas County, Maryland, or we could call it Douglas City. We could call it Washington, D.C. We call it anything. But the question is, functionally, do we want full voting rights and home rule? And, you know, would Maryland accept us? Yes. Should we go to Maryland? Yes. You know, can we become the 51st state? You know, well, you know, that would be great. But is it truly achievable if, you know, all Republicans are universally opposed to it? So that well, you know.
Well, I would say to that, first of all, that I agree that retrocession is a solution because it's a form of statehood. And those people that say that Washington has a distinct character, that's absolutely true. We do have a distinct character, right. But that's a situation that occurs in many states. For example, the people that live in Schenectady are not the same as the people that live in Manhattan. There are many, many states that have a different culture. Sacramento and San Diego aren't the same. Lubbock and Dallas are not the same. So that I really agree with you that that's not much of an argument, but it's an argument that's out there. But another problem that I have is that it's taken us so long. This is just a practical matter on my part. It's taken us so long to get people on the statehood bandwagon. As you know, we've gone through many iterations of different things, from the D.C. Voting Rights Act, which would have given us one vote in the House, to a constitutional amendment back in the 80s, which would have given us full representation in both houses, to finally now to have 80% plus people in the District of Columbia on the statehood bandwagon. So that's another thing that bothers me a little, is we've finally gotten everybody moving in the same direction. I'm not sure that now's the time to throw a grenade into the room and try to reorganize everything.
Well, I appreciate, I think that's a constructive comment, or, you know, valuable. And that's one reason that the Committee for the Capital City has been calling our effort statehood. You know, we are saying this is, in fact, the article that was in the Post called "The Other Path to Statehood." You know, it's not anti-statehood. It just says, it says this is statehood. It's just another way to get it. And phrasing it that way, we're trying to be constructive and positive. I mean, but if 80% of the only problem with this, with counting, you know, things the way you just did there, is that the one group of people that are not at the table to decide, you know, what's going to happen is District of Columbia residents. This is the shocking, you know, we don't have any elected officials on Congress with voting authority. So therefore, when Congress decides what's going to happen, or Maryland decides what's going to happen, we don't elect those people to those bodies who are going to make the decision about what the solution is. So that's why I fully believe that if given the alternative, district residents would say, I would rather be a new state than a part of Maryland. I understand that completely. But I question, would, if district residents were told, would you like to stay the way it is, or would you like to be merge back into Maryland as Douglas County, which would you prefer? Because, again, we're not a party of power to the decision-making process. Now, admittedly, we're all people. We all, you know, pay taxes, but, you know, we don't, there's nobody who represents us, which is, of course, the irony of that's what America's all about, is, you know, taxes and representation. But I just wonder, would the district residents, if given the choice, through would they accept joining Maryland if they were given that choice? And I think, Michael, that's hard for us to know, what that would be. And that's why this is such a difficult issue to resolve, because it's not a beauty contest of what do district residents want. We can say we want statehood, and then, you know, Congress says, yeah, right, we ain't giving it to you, and there's no consequences for them not to say that. So that's why we are trying to organize some political movement in the direction of giving district residents the choice, you know, would you like to become a part of Maryland? But I think you're right. That's a decision that Congress, you know, Congress has to approve it. Maryland has to say, yeah, we want D.C. And then D.C. residents have to say, yes, we would like to join. If any of those things don't happen, then it can't happen. And that's why you alluded to me that it is a difficult process. I think it's very difficult, but measured by in whose best interest is it to do this, it's a slam dunk. I mean, all three parties, Congress, Maryland, and D.C., benefit from this solution, whereas, you know, the 51st state solution, district residents would like that. Maryland, you know, may or may not want it, depending on that taxation thing. But we know that Congress doesn't like it. Now, if Congress went, you know, 75% or 80% Democratic, then clearly it could happen. That's why we shouldn't take it off the table. It's still out there.
Well, I agree with you on that. We shouldn't take it off the table, and that's one of the reasons that you were invited on the show, because you should be at the table. And so before we move on and
thank you,
and
Senator,
we talk about current events with Doug, let me ask you a couple things so that people can plug into you, and then maybe in the future, near future, we can have a discussion on how people feel about it. Maybe we can get some feedback on the way our listeners feel about it and do another show with you, John. But for now, tell people what your email address is in terms of Committee for the Capital City and how they can find out more about what you guys are doing.
Okay, thank you very much. It's we have a website. It's cityhood4dc, www.cityhood, cityhoodfordc.org. .org, and you know, you can Google Committee for the Capital City. There's also another group that's recently started up called Douglas County, Maryland. That they are also advocating a similar position to us, and they can be Googled. There's another group, DC Voting Rights Project, which also has a website that's working on DC Voting Rights Group is actually in favor of all the solutions. So they are doing a petition drive that encourages elected officials to solve the problem, and they're in favor of all the solutions, anything that works.
Great, and I encourage our listeners to go to those websites. I hope you'll come back soon, John. Thanks for being on the show.
Okay,
we'll have
I would love
you back,
to thank you very,
and we'll
thank you
continue
much.
This discussion. You're right about it's the bottom line. It's getting our rights. How we
exactly.
get them?
Exactly. We'll be running into each other all over the
right.
place, Michael, as we have done for years. So
yes.
I appreciate everything that you have done, and it's great.
And same here, John.
Okay.
I'll be
thank
back
you.
In a minute. This song, we're going to play a song in the interim. This goes out from John and all the people on the Committee for the Capital City to the people of Maryland. Here's one from the Jackson 5. We'll be back in a minute.
When I have you to myself.
And we're back. We're back with the irrepressible Doug, who has the best political opinions in America and has joined us for the show today. We're so happy to have him. Thanks for being on, Doug. Oh. I want to talk about Bill O'Reilly. He's going to be a podcaster. What do you think?
Wow. You know, that's times are changing. What do I think? I think he's just been upgraded. Of course,
yeah.
I have a particular bias towards podcasting, but now, rather than one episode on TV that you never get to see again or tune into it, you're really the time you want, except if you know how to work with a VCR, which I am one who doesn't, you know, it's an upgrade.
Well, and that's really becoming the trend, right? I mean, my kids watch these on Netflix. I've even gotten into, I have a favorite show that's on these days called Veep, which is just hysterical political comedy, and I forget to watch it every Sunday. It's on at 10:30 on Sunday. I forget to watch it every Sunday. But now I've learned how to get it on demand, so I don't have to watch it on Sunday. I can wait till Tuesday evening or, you know, something when there's not on. So this really is becoming the thing.
It's far easier to manipulate people when they have to imagine what it is you're doing. Think about that. If you were government or anything else, radio would even be a better target for your target audience. We actually are going to use our imaginations again. You have to.
Right.
Because, Bill, quite frankly, you're not that pretty.
Well, and so what happens? Do we now bring in Foley artists? Do I have to hire a Foley artist for Shadow Politics to make the noises and the sound effects? And the, right? Is that, do we get that, you know, are we going to evolve that way so we become like imaginary TV?
You know, I believe that it's probably going to be part that. Interesting about the future. If you can take everybody's parts and pieces and put them together, you'd probably have something.
Yeah, well, and you know what? I mean, that's the thing. It's dynamically changing. You know, this whole internet is just changing every aspect of our lives. And to move on from Bill O'Reilly to another big news story, we find out today that France is going to have a runoff election in May, and for the first time in the history of the French electoral democracy, there's going to be no mainstream candidate. The two extreme candidates are going to go at it, and I wonder how much of this is a result of the internet, because traditionally people in power have control the mainstream media, which you really can't do with the internet, right? You can't control the internet.
You inside all of us, right down to our physical being, we believe in the uniqueness of an individual. We might believe in the rule that everybody should be treated equally, but we believe in the uniqueness. And so you're battling ideas of, do you want to live with uniqueness? Even your state, which you're in right now, which is, you know, you got two different ways of going at it. You could go statehood, right, versus states inclusion, states destination versus states integration. I mean, boom, there's a grenade. An alternative point of view. And it's, you know, and you even burst his bubble by explaining the particulars, but you have, you know, those dynamics at work. And I think for the most part, people identify with something to make them feel unique. And in today's world, culture's how we've done it. You know, when you say, who are you? You name your background. I'm Irish, English. You know, you're going to name your particular culture in respect. And we're taking that away from people on some level. And maybe if we do take it away, we have to respect that enough so people think they still have it. I don't know how you do that.
Well, are we bringing in people that would normally not have a voice in the process? You know, basically, that's what I'm all about, right? Giving the people of D.C. a voice. Are we bringing in people? Because we've seen the Brexit thing. We've seen Trump elected, even though he didn't win the popular vote. We've seen this thing in France. Are we bringing in new people into the process and giving them a voice that they didn't have before by through the internet. You think we're doing that?
Yeah, maybe. No, not totally, but it's there. It's growing. And yes, I think, hey, maybe somebody will come to the table and say, well, here's a third choice. You can be Liechtenstein too.
Oh, well,
let's go for a fourth choice. Let's create a whole new category. We'll call it the short state.
With
the benefits
God.
Of a state with all the calories of a city.
All right. Well, okay. I'm resigning and I'm signing on as the campaign chairman of the Doug for president or Doug for imperial ruler, whatever he wants to call himself, campaign. But I think this is happening. I think we're bringing in people that have never been in the process before, and it's motivating them to get out there and vote.
I think
that's a good thing. I really do.
But I think people are participating, but are they really, participating more in the voting process? I wonder. They might be participating more in the maybe getting out there or, crying, press for a cause. But are they really getting out there to vote so much? Well, yeah, the population is going to shift that way, isn't it, eventually? From the older to the younger dogs, right to the top, even when you're dealing with Murdoch and his sons. It appears that his sons want to kind of move in even a different direction, which is interesting how business has gone Democratic. Right? You always would have thought business was, a Republican institution. They were there to protect the Republican side, right?
But they were traditionally,
right.
But change. It's changing.
Change
well,
is
you
in
know,
the air.
And speaking of that I saw a statistic that in, I think, 1970, about 16% of the American population was in favor of legalizing marijuana, and now it's 60%. And on that note, we just had 420. I'm not sure that I fully understand the significance of 420, but it's become kind of National Pot Day. And a bunch of people, actually people that we know that are activists in Washington, went up and they stood on a little piece of land that's owned by the District of Columbia. As you might know, the District of Columbia is pot's legal in the District of Columbia. And they stood on a little tiny piece of land owned by the District of Columbia and gave free joints to anybody who could prove that they work for Congress. So if you showed up with a congressional ID, they gave you two joints. Well, the Capitol Hill police did not have the same sense of humor about it as everybody else did, and they arrested him.
Oh.
They arrested my friend Adam Heidegger, who's been a leader in the statehood movement as well as the marijuana movement, and they arrested him, and they charged him. Get this. You're allowed to have 2 ounces of marijuana. You're allowed to carry 2 ounces of marijuana in the District of Columbia. He had 2.06 ounces on him, and his people are saying it's because they didn't take into consideration the rolling papers.
Oh, man.
They were joints. So they look like they're prosecuting him. But wait, tomorrow, the same groups are getting together, and they're going to sit on the Capitol steps and smoke joints. They're going to smoke pot.
Now, that's true resistance.
Yes, it's even illegal in the District of Columbia. You're not allowed to smoke it in public. So it'll be interesting to see what they do tomorrow. And I just saw a thing on the news where in Colorado, they've opened the first drive-through marijuana store. It's called Tumbleweed. You can drive through and of course there's signs all over the place saying you're not using drugs while driving is against the law. Well, absolutely, right? Nobody's going to smoke a joint in the car after they pick it up. We know that, right? Yeah, I mean, of course they have drive-through liquor stores, and I'm sure plenty of pop tops have been popped in the car on the way home. But anyway, the culture is changing in that regard, just what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. We've gone from this small minority of people that thought marijuana was all right to now having drive-through marijuana dispensaries and people walking up to the Capitol and smoking on the steps. I think that this is a law that you're going to see change more rapidly than any other law in the district, in the United States. I think you're going to see every ballot, you're going to see more and more states legalizing it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is certainly, you know, this is certainly, I think, what you're talking about, you know, the change rolling over from one generation to another and getting these people in the political system. And this is one of the things that bothers me, I got to be honest with you, about the whole Trump thing, is that people on the liberal, I'm a liberal Democrat, and all the people that approach me complain about Donald Trump and the things that he's doing, and I get it, but you know what? Donald Trump isn't really the problem. The problem is, you know, if you're a liberal and you don't like the way things going, the problem are the 40% of the American public that's standing behind this man. You know, it's not about him. It's about, this is how democracy is, right? He won the election. These people want change. And the fact that we don't want it doesn't make it illegitimate. It's legitimate. And unfortunately, we've got to find a way to deal with the change and reconcile things and not just stand up and say Donald Trump's wrong, because it doesn't matter. The people behind him are what matter. So on that happy note,
I think the way you think. I concur, Senator.
Right, you need to call Mrs. Brown and tell her that, because there's a difference of opinion.
What you're
about
saying
the way
is, it's all right to be Republican. No, I'm joking.
It is all right to be Republican.
We're not going to come out on the streets and hurt you.
You're not what I am, but you know what?
You're not going to hurt anybody for wearing a Trump hat.
And things change. We have a constitutional amendment that says you can't drink. And we have another constitutional amendment that says you can. So things change over time, right? And that's what's going on. Change is the only single thing that's found everywhere, indisputably, everywhere in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be able to deal with it.
Yep.
And on that note, I will give you the last word. And thank you for being on the show, because you're always such an inspiration. And we'll see you next week, America. Maria's still on vacation next week, so I'm going to try to entice some interesting people to be on the show with me.
Thank you, Senator. Love your show. So happy to participate. Ta-ta.
Thanks. Bye, America.
Give the people their right to vote.